Welcome to All About Business with me, James Reed, the podcast that covers everything about business, management, and leadership. More than 92 million tons of textile waste is produced globally every year, and mostly because bacteria is making our clothes stink. One British innovator found the fix, and the world's biggest brands are buying in. Joining me today on All About Business is Byron Dixon, the founder and CEO of Microfresh, an innovative technology that eliminates the invisible mold growing on your clothes and furniture. In this episode, we discuss the key to getting big brands to switch to your product, the steps he took to grow his customer base, and what the UK can learn from the Scandinavians. Well, today on All About Business, I couldn't be more delighted than to welcome Byron Dixon, OBE, who's traveled to talk to us today from Leicester. Byron is an amazing entrepreneur, innovator, and scientist. He's the CEO and founder of a company called Microfresh.
That's right.
And you're going to tell us all about it, aren't you, Byron?
I am.
Where I'd like to begin is, what does Microfresh do? What is the problem that Microfresh sets out to solve?
And it's ironic that you almost slip the tongue said Microsoft, because lots of people do that.
But I didn't say that, Byron. We have had Microsoft on the podcast.
Okay. So what Microfresh does, in I think it's very simple, is that it stops the growth of microbes. That's the boring bit. So any microfreshed surface means microbes can't grow.
Microbes are fungi. Fungi.
This size. Not literally this size, I'm relative. Bacteria, this size, or viruses, which are this size. And that's what Microfresh does.
Do you know that joke? Why did the mushroom go to the party?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to say the punchline.
You're going to say it. Go on. You need to say it, because they will say it. You know the joke, because he's a fun guy.
He's a fun guy. So you're out to get these fun guy, in a sense.
We are.
And so how did that begin? What sort of immediate problem or what sort of issue did you first see and think, oh, I could do something about that?
Yeah. And James, that's a question a lot of people ask. They say, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
The short story is I could do chemistry at school. That's all I could do. And I went to what's called a comprehensive school and a sync school, but I could do chemistry. So I left school. I approached Zeneca for a job.
Right.
The nearest, before it was a pharmaceutical business, so Zeneca, and it was a proper chemical business, I call it. The nearest one to me was in Loughborough, and that was the leather and shoe division of Zeneca, supplying chemicals to the tanneries and shoe factories all over the world. So I worked there for 10 years, doing customer service, looking at leather, looking at problems with leather and shoes. Then I got headhunted by Echo, the shoe company, which is in Denmark. So I didn't realise the job was in Denmark. I accepted the job as something new.
So this is why you can speak Danish.
That's why I speak Danish.
Which you were just talking to one of my colleagues.
That's right.
He was quite impressed.
That's right. So
you went to work in Denmark. So you didn't know the job was in Denmark?
No. So I got this job offer and I thought, that's great. And then the guy who offered me the job, the head of human resources, and I'm still friends with today, he said, oh, do you want to fly from East Midlands or Heathrow? And I said, where to? And he said, well, Denmark, of course. But right. I thought the job was in London. So I thought, why not? And I went off to Denmark for 4 years. I worked for Echo. Fantastic company. Absolutely fantastic company. And the difference was Zeneca was top-down management. And I'm not saying either's right or wrong. They're just very different. And when I went to Echo, it's bottom-up. So you're almost like an entrepreneur in a business. And I was responsible for the finishes around the whole world. So every shoe? For every shoe. And then I work close with the tanneries.
How many shoes do they make? I mean,
they did about 20 million pairs a year back then. That was 20 years ago.
So that's 40 million shoes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And so you're responsible for making sure they're all...
Absolutely. They all looked perfect, felt perfect, made the most of the leather. Nothing happened. They didn't finish, didn't come off, didn't change colour. I was responsible for the whole lot.
Wow.
And given complete freedom because of my background. And I loved it.
Danish businesses are interesting, aren't they? Because, I mean, I've been... researching Danish business for a book I'm writing on philanthropy companies. A lot of them have charities owning substantial stakes, and they have very enlightened management.
I felt like a chrysalis here, and then I felt like a butterfly when I went to Echo. It was that different. Denmark's a great country. I've still got great friends there. You pay a lot of tax.
Right.
And it's very dark in the winter. So I came back after 4 years, started my own leather chemicals business. And then I remember that Echo shoes, when they were made in Asia, used to go mouldy when they were shipped to the West. So I was struggling back then. I was pretty skint. Moved back to Leicester, living in a little terrace. And I thought, why don't I make a product that stops the shoes going mouldy in transit that you can just put on in Asia, spray on, and it protects them in transit. And that became Microfresh.
For my benefit, really, could you just explain what Microfresh is as a product, how it works, how people engage with it?
Yeah, sure. So when I made the first Microfresh, that's a liquid that you spray. And then when we got to other applications, so the manufacturers buy it as a liquid. We ship it from the UK to our overseas offices. We've got 16 all around the world. Then the manufacturers buy it locally. So you've got the liquid. You've got a concentrate that goes into textiles because that's a wet process when they're manufacturing. So you don't need all that water, basically. Mm. We then also have a powder version for powder coated onto metals and the pellet, which goes into plastics. So the four versions are a liquid, a concentrated liquid, a powder and a pellet.
And this is all going into different manufacturing processes.
That's right.
To keep products fresh.
That's right. So if it's plastic products that are non-porous, you would add the pellets at the point of manufacture. So when you extrude the plastic, it's in the plastic.
And that stops bacteria and fungi growing
mold,
on things.
On the surface, mold. That's right.
On the surface.
That's right.
So it has a wide number of applications. And one of the important ones is obviously in fashion and clothes.
Yeah.
And we think a lot about plastic waste. I mean, this has come up on the podcast before, the problem with plastics. But there's also a problem with fabrics, isn't there?
There is a problem, yeah. And the circular economy, if you go to any charity shop, there's a lot of clothing. So a lot of people take clothing or throw clothing away because it smells. So, or it wears out. And it's widely known that laundering wears fabrics. It just does. I mean, I saw the ex-CEO of Procter & Gamble on TV and he said, that's why we invented it. The two go hand in hand. So the less you launder, the longer the fabric lasts. You launder to clean fabrics, of course, clothing. I'm talking about bedding, towels. So that won't change, but you don't need to kill bacteria if it's microfreshed. So you don't need to go to the high temperatures. So you can actually cool wash at 20 or even 30. You don't need to go to 40 or 60.
That's if it's been microfreshed at manufacture.
That's right. That's right.
So you can use it for longer and it's
right.
going to last longer.
That's right. Saying? You wash at lower temperature, it lasts longer, which means less goes to landfill and also to thrown away, basically.
So this is really good for sustainability.
It's a proven, tangible sustainability benefit that's easily understood by the consumer. You don't need to kill bacteria. The only reason you wash at the higher temperatures is to kill bacteria, because you can get things clean at 30. But traditionally, people have washed at higher temperatures, even going back to boil wash.
Sure.
In the 70s, I think it was. But if you don't need to kill bacteria, all you need to do is remove the dirt, and that's done with gentle detergent and agitation.
And it uses less power as well.
A lot less power, less detergent, less carbon
longer
footprint,
lasting.
And uses less water.
Well, that's amazing. So it's sustainable in all sorts of different directions in that way.
It is. And I wanted to be a chemistry teacher because I thought chemistry is a bit of a, you know, pie in the sky thing for a lot of kids. But one thing I try and do with this business is to make it simple to understand. So the Microfresh name has got simple to understand, tangible benefits. As I said, lower temperature, less water, less detergent, less energy.
So fresh is easy to understand. Yeah. Micro means?
Can't see it.
Microscopic,
yeah.
So Microfresh.
We have a brand director that's ex-Saatchi & Saatchi.
Right.
He's on the board, as I was telling you about, and everybody thinks he thought of the name because they say it's such a cool name, but it was...
I worked at Saatchi & Saatchi once.
Oh, did you?
I'll claim it, shouldn't I?
You can claim it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's
I
a
just
good name.
Thought,
no, you obviously thought of it.
I just thought it's clean and you can't see it, so Microfresh.
Yeah. That's a good start in branding generally, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know nothing about branding, and I mean nothing. I just made up the name because I thought it says what it does. And in time, what's come round is it's proven to be a great, easy-to-understand brand. And when Next first launched in 2011, the reason they wanted the name on the shoes was because they said it just says what it is.
So that was the tag that you were talking about.
That's the swing tag, yeah. If it was, you know, Dixon Antimicrobials, they'd have said, no, we don't want a tag, because somebody's got to then look at what that means.
Yeah.
Whereas Microfresh just says what it is.
So you invented this product?
Yeah.
So you use your own science.
That's right.
Chemistry knowledge.
Yeah. In fact, I still have some of my old Open University equipment, which I used to make the product.
How does it work? What's it do? And so how does it stop this from happening?
Yeah, so what I wanted, I was clear in my mind that I didn't want something that kills fungi, kills microbes, because that's quite easy. You can do that with bleach or vinegar, you know, quite nasty chemicals. So if you look at anything that kills mold in store, there's quite often some quite hazardous symbols attached to them. But I wanted something that was non-hazardous and something that just prevents the growth. So if in everyday language, microbes land on the surface and they can't reproduce, so they suffocate.
Right.
So they don't proliferate and you don't get all the deficiencies that are associated with microbes, i.e. the growth of mold. But I didn't realise at the time it also stops bacteria. So things like E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. And also I played football for Leicester University and one of the lads in the team said, if it stops mold, it should stop bacteria, and bacteria causes odours.
Oh.
So we tested it inside the shoes and they didn't smell.
Oh. So this replaced what were called odour eaters, is that right?
Yeah.
Because I remember those when youth.
Yeah. That's right, yes. So nobody pays extra for non-mouldy shoes, that's just a given.
Right.
But when retailers saw that by protecting the shoes in transit, they also had a sellable benefit to the consumer of the shoes won't smell, that turned our business around.
Oh, amazing. So then you had lots of other applications, I guess, from this technology.
That's right, yeah. That came from the bacteria side.
Yeah.
So when I realised it stops odours and then we realised it works in textiles, because it was meant for leather.
Right.
We tested it in clothing and in textiles and we did a deal with John Lewis back in 2014. And they said to us, how many washes does it do? And I said, I actually don't know. And they tested it and came back and said, it does 50 washes. And I said, it's that good? And they said, absolutely. It's still over 80% efficacious after 50 washes. So we then realised that we had a product and a brand that you could put onto textiles. That means they will last longer.
Right.
Because you can wash at lower temperature. You don't need to kill microbes and all the benefits that go with that. Less detergent, less water, less energy.
So that is good news if you don't want to have lots of textile waste and
that's right. That's
associated right. landfill. And
that's right.
The results of fast fashion.
Absolutely.
And so you're very much focused on the other end of...
That's right. But this is, bear in mind, this was 2009 and several retailers said, we don't want that. We want people to buy things and built-in obsolescence, as you call it. But then sustainability became a thing and they said, where's that guy that was here a few weeks ago? That cheeky guy from Leicester.
Oh, I see. So you were not exactly pushing it an open door to start with.
Not at all. In fact...
Beyond the shoe business, I suppose.
Beyond the shoe business, that's right. Yeah. It was a completely closed door. And everybody said, why would we want to do that?
Right, which doesn't reflect that well on that sector, does it? But now that you've persuaded them that this is a good...
That's right. And so we've now become a brand that means, it kind of means sustainability, and it means they care about sustainability.
So what are there any other applications? You mentioned E. coli, and I mean, are there food-related applications
that you're now involved with? Yeah, so the main one is healthcare.
Right.
Because one of the reasons is... hospital-acquired infections, HAI. So people know that once you go into hospital, it's quite often you can come out sicker than when you went in because of what you pick up when you're in there. And you probably remember...
Well, it's definitely a fear, isn't it?
It's the fear, that's right. And you remember MRSA. Well, that was a classic example.
That was a sort of superbug.
Superbug, that's right. Mm. That's right. And there's a bacteria called Staphylococcus aureus. And this was what's called methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. And you could pick it up in hospital very very easily, and it's very deadly. So an application for Microfresh was on bed linen and towels where it just couldn't reproduce.
So is that sprayed on the bed linen?
No, it's fixed in when it's made. At manufacture. So when you dye the fabric, you add Microfresh and it's fixed in.
So it's all at the beginning of
the production process. The supply chain.
So how many customers have you got now?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say around the world, 200. 250.
Big producers of fabrics, leather products. And where's your biggest market though?
Currently, it's bedding.
Right.
We're a massive ingredient brand in bedding, so you can go into John Lewis now and buy bedding with Microfresh technology and several other retailers. But what is growing is the call for mould reduction in social housing.
So talk me through that. What's that mean?
Yeah, so I grew up in a council house and my mum was a single parent with five children. And mould was just a thing back then. Everybody had it. You just wiped it off with a bit of bleach. Now it's much worse.
Well, the mould's worse. Yeah. In what way? What?
It's a lot more... If you go into some social housing, you see mould. It can be whole walls. It can be whole rooms, which you never used to see when we were when we were kids.
And is that because the housing's deteriorated or the mould's got more powerful?
Well, generally, the housing deteriorated.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when I lived in Denmark, as cold as it was in winter, you had to have the window open to sleep at night because the houses are that well insulated. Whereas here, we have a lot of old houses, a lot of old stock. So mould is a huge problem. And 10 years ago, we did some trials with Aston University and the HSE with Innovate UK funding.
Right.
Because I thought, will it work on walls? Friends tried it and they said it's absolutely doesn't come back. The biggest problem with mould is it comes back. You can kill it, it's quite easy. So I thought, I don't want to go to market with a product where your friends say it's wonderful, because that's like your mum saying you're a good boy. Well, my mum doesn't say that.
Did she say that?
No, she doesn't.
Oh, right. That would be consistent with quite a lot of our guests.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, so we went to Innovate UK. They part-funded a two-year testing schedule, best part of course.
That's for the benefit of our listeners. What does Innovate UK do? Because so I mean, it's quite interesting you use that. Yeah.
It's government.
It's out there, funding, isn't it, for them?
And it's government money, government funding, and it funds innovative projects. There's a bit more to it than that.
Because but you have to apply.
You have to apply.
And if they like what you're proposing.
If they like what you're proposing, it can create jobs or save lives or build benefit the economy, they will help to fund it.
Which is fantastic.
It's really, really good. And it's, well, back then it was grant funding. Now they do a bit of debt or a bit of equity funding. But we would never have been able to do that without the funding. And it's match funding. So we matched over the 2 years on average 50%. So we put in 125K. Yeah. They put in 125K. But at the end, we had first year report from the HSE saying it absolutely works on walls, on plaster, and even if you put paint over it. And the second year was Aston University ran a trial in a shower room throughout the whole of the winter, and it showed there was absolutely no mold growth. So
this hopefully will be widely applied.
That's right. So
it's dangerous, this mold, isn't it? Black mold.
It is dangerous. Like
if you breathe it in and stuff.
Yeah. It's the cause of a lot of respiratory issues. I lived in Denmark, as you know, and Denmark, Northern Europe, mold is almost classed as a pathogen, whereas over here it never has been until, tragically, I think it was 4 years ago now, a young lad died up in Rochdale, and they realised it was because of the mould. So this young lad was called Awab Ishak, and a lot's happened since then.
I remember that. It was shocking.
Yeah, it's shocking. So from this October, it's going to become law. There's a law that will say if you have damp and mould, the landlord has to respond. I think it's within 48 hours that's coming.
My daughter in Glasgow, who's a student there, was told that it was her problem, not the landlord's. Yeah. It's good to know that. I'll tell her.
Yeah, yeah. That's quite often they say it's the way you live and, you know, you can't have the window open. The windows.
She had to have the window open in the winter because of it, I think.
Yeah.
Not because it was too warm.
You know, we grew up in a council house. The last, if I got caught opening the window in the winter when the heating's on, my nose would be even flatter, as, you know, my mum would say.
Right, well, I'm glad you didn't. So that's an amazing range of applications.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd like to ask you a bit. I mean, you said you were good at chemistry at school. You went to a comprehensive. Mm. You said it was a sink school.
It was. It
doesn't sound like the ideal place to start a journey to become a scientist and an innovator. So how did you do that?
That's a good question. I think, I mean, people around me will say Byron's, you know, hyperactive, and I always have been. And when I was at school, I found school a bit dull, and I could do things, but I just found it in general a bit dull. And then when I was about 10 and I saw chemistry, and I thought, you can burn things and get a grade. So you can blow things up.
You like the excitement of that.
That's right. Yeah, you can get a grade for blowing stuff up and burning things. And
you were doing practical chemistry, weren't you?
Absolutely.
So it's good they had a lab then at this school.
Yeah. And I thought, this is absolutely for me. But also, James, the thing is, I actually understood it. And I don't, to this day, I don't know how, but I understood it. I could see atomic models in my head. I just got it. And I just thought, why does everybody else find this so difficult?
So it sort of mirrored your abilities in a way.
Yeah. And I just got it. I did my O-level and I was doing the exam, and I just thought, this is straightforward. This is like saying, put your right leg in front of your left and call it walking. And I did A-level. It was the same. I just thought, why is this a thing? It's just obvious.
It's the way the world is, sort of thing. But, I mean, I suppose that's true. I mean, that's what chemistry is ultimately, isn't
it? Yeah. I did. I just thought, why are people going on about this being so hard? Because I just got it. And then, but I couldn't afford to go to university, so I got a job.
So you got a job. Yeah. But you went to university later, interestingly.
I did.
So what did you do?
I did. So I got to my mid-20s, and I thought, some of my friends from school had come back to Leicester with degrees. And I thought, I'd like a degree. What can I get a degree in? I know, chemistry. So I looked around and I found the Open University. because I thought I had a job at
then. So you were working at, was this at Zenica?
I was working at Zenica, yeah. Stahl was the division it was called, Stahl, S-T-A-H-L, which was a Dutch division of Zenica. And I wrote off to the Open University and I did Open University.
And is that something you'd recommend to other people?
Absolutely, yeah.
Situation like that.
Halfway through it, I was shot off to Denmark.
But you could carry on, I guess.
Carry on from abroad, yeah. And because I was travelling a lot with my job, I had more time to do it. I was in airports or long haul flights out to Asia. So I'd do assignments on planes, which people found quite interesting.
That's hard work. I mean, you're doing a job, you're studying. I mean, that's pretty intensive, I imagine. Yeah, so how long did that take you to get the degree?
9 years.
9 years.
It took me 9 years.
And do you feel that that was helpful in, as well in terms of developing your ideas for the business, or was it aside from that?
In that phase, I went through a huge amount of personal development because I grew up with, let's just say, on a council estate. So you can imagine the sort of people I had around me. Then I randomly got this
job. You said you were one of five siblings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What order, what number are you out of interest?
I'm the second youngest.
The second youngest.
Yes, yeah, I'm the second youngest.
Do you think that has a bearing on how you are? I mean, I'm always interested in this sort of birth
orders. I don't
think
so. Maybe the
others might say. I'm the eldest. Some people say, oh, you're paid by the eldest. I don't know if there's any truth in that.
Yeah, my eldest brother, Cliff, people say he behaves like the eldest, as in he's very sensible and, you know, smart and straightforward, as I'm the random maverick. Yeah. And I'm the youngest boy.
Right.
So we always used to have, as kids, we had those fairy tales. You know, they typically had the three sons, and there was always, the youngest one was always the coolest one.
Do you think?
So I used to play that.
That's what you told people, weren't you?
I did.
All right, yeah. So, there might be something in that, But maybe there's something in that you felt that you could go and try things a bit more, or you'd be a bit more free, in a sense.
Yeah, and I've always been the free spirit, always. I've tried anything new, tried anything different, go to different places, different countries. Yeah, the Denmark thing. As I say, the personal development, because by the time I'd been to Denmark, done my degree, done a whole amount of travelling, because in Echo, you travel all the time. You're in Slovakia, you think, I'm going back on Friday. You wake up Friday morning, there's an envelope under your hotel room saying you now need to go to Brazil, here's your ticket.
And you were going there, what, to oversee a batch
of
product?
That's right, to see, shoes or leather.
Yeah.
So I came back to England as a completely different person. I spoke and understood several languages, as you've seen today.
So I've seen Danish. What else can you speak?
So I can get by in, I can understand Swedish, the Nordic, Scandinavian languages. I can understand German because I live quite close to Germany. I live 2 kilometres from the border. I spent a lot of time in Portugal and Italy. So the Latin languages I can again pick up.
I mean, I hate to say this, but this is kind of being closed off to young people now because of Brexit.
Completely.
Which is such a shame. I give it all the help that's given you.
And I did it at the right time because 20 years ago, if you went to Portugal, you had to learn Portuguese, whereas now everybody speaks English in the whole world, which I do think it's good, but I think it's a bit of a shame because I had to get by. I was in a restaurant last night and I said goodbye and thank you to 4 different people in the restaurant, waiters generally, and one was Brazilian, so that was Portuguese. There was a Chilean girl, so that was Spanish. There was an Arabic guy, so that was Chokran, and there was an Italian. Yeah, it was an Italian restaurant. They all thought that was hilarious.
So does that help you today with your business? Because you said you deal in different countries
around
the world. Absolutely,
yeah. So, and we are truly global.
So it's, people speak English, but they do like it when you speak their own language.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's a good skill to develop, you would say.
Even that willing. But also what I learned in my time at Echo, the owner of Echo was a massively inspirational guy, Carl Toosby. And we had the same birthday, which was ironic, in the whole company.
When is that?
February the 23rd. So
you and Carl share the same birthday.
Yeah, that's right.
So what did you do? Did he celebrate with you, invite you for a coffee?
Kind of, yeah. We'd go to his house on my birthday. Yeah.
Nice.
Which was a bit random. But
he started that company.
He started Echo from scratch.
And so you obviously knew him personally.
I met him when I went to Echo.
Did you learn much from him?
Loads.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So working for an entrepreneur like that.
Absolutely.
Was educational.
Massively. And when I was leaving, he said to me, don't get a job. He said, you shouldn't get a job. You're not the sort of person that gets a job. You should start your own business. And he said, now you've got an international network, which I didn't have before I went to Echo. So I came back, started my own business. And
I guess he became a customer.
Yeah, he did. But I fell flat on my face for the first few years because
Why? What
nobody
happened?
Bought Microfresh because it was about sustainability. So I had right. 5 years with zero turnover.
Pushing at those doors that wouldn't open.
Pushing at those doors.
5 years of zero turnover.
5 years of zero turnover.
So we're establishing quite a few things about you, Byron. I mean,
chemist,
linguist, but pretty determined. I mean, that's telling me.
Yeah.
You're not a quitter, though, are you?
I'm not a quitter, no. But I'm not afraid of failure as well.
So why not? I mean, because that sort of haunts some people.
Yeah, I think naturally I'm a creative person. When I say creative, I don't mean like an artist, but I mean I like to build things. So I'm not scared of starting again. So I've never been afraid of everything crashing. And that's why as entrepreneurs, we take risks.
Yeah,
and I'll take some big risks.
Because if you don't try, you don't know.
That's right. Yeah. And the risk is, the bigger the risk, for me, the bigger the thrill.
But the biggest risk or the biggest failure is actually not trying, I always think.
And I always say, I treat things like a plunge pool. So just hold your nose and jump in. It's going to hurt. And it's going to...
You're expecting it to be cold. That's because of your time in Denmark. It's not always cold.
That's right. I'm not the sort to be standing around the edge just dipping my toes in going, it's a bit cold. I'll just go straight in. Saying that, when I'm on holiday, I don't go into the cold sea. So in practice, I don't do it. But in theory, it gets me through.
But in your business life, you do. So you were 5 years. So what was the sort of breakthrough then? When did it suddenly turn?
The breakthrough was I pitched all the retailers. Nobody was interested. And then I got a call from Next.
Who were up in Leicester.
In Leicester, yeah. And I'd been to all the people down here, M&S has saved me the whole lot. And they said, can you come and see us? And I said, yeah. And they said, can you go through that costing again? And I thought, that's an odd question because I've been here like 2 years ago. I went through everything. So I went through the costing, what it cost them to micropress a pair of shoes. And they came back and said, right, we're going to run a trial. And that was 2011. So 2011, they ran girls back to school shoes with Microfresh technology. And they said, we'll need your swing tags. And I said, yeah, sure, thinking I haven't got any swing tags. By the time this comes around, I will have. So if you're watching the next people, you know. And they launched girl shoes in 2011, back to school girls, really successful. And they came back and said, we're going to launch boys and girls the year afterwards. So 2012, all their back to school shoes were microfreshed, and they still are today.
And they're a hugely successful
and
company.
They're a huge successful
and
company.
A big and important customer. But so their calculation, when they said, would you run the costs, was that they must have been losing product or... There must have been some sort of trade-off where they could see by using Microfresh.
That's right.
They would have better economics.
That's right. And I don't know, maybe something happened the year before and they'd lost market share and somebody internally said, we need something, a differentiator. And they thought, where's that guy? So that was 2011, 2012.
So they remembered you from 2 years before.
2 years before, yeah.
There's a real message there. I mean, I'm often telling people it's not a question of, you know, if you're going to make the sale, it's when.
Keep going. But this is a very good example of that. Yeah,
if you've got a good product or you've got a good service.
In fact, when I pitched to them, there were two questions they asked in the first one. One was, we don't sell smelly shoes.
We don't, they're not smelly usually when you buy them.
That's right.
Thanks to you, probably. But that's right.
And they just said, there's no demand. But then 2 years later, they came back and said, so something happened in those 2 years, which I've never been party to, where they came back and said, let's try it. And then 2014, retailers do a thing called comp shopping. They go around to the stores. So we got 2014, Tesco, Debenhams, and Sainsbury's came to us and said, we want to launch Microfresh on our back-to-school shoes.
When you say, they're comparing what the others are doing.
Yeah.
And they can see that Next were doing this.
That's right.
So once you've got one, the others
line up. It's like a domino effect.
They see that, especially when it's a market leader like Next, I suppose. So that's quite a good strategy for someone starting out.
Absolutely,
Pick who you want to, if you could get one customer, who would it be to encourage the others, so to speak?
I've got a question for you.
Oh, yes, go on. Yeah.
When they came back to me, because I pitched to men's shoes, sports shoes, why do you think Next picked back to school?
Why did they pick back to school?
To me, it was a random thing.
For the shoe range?
Yeah.
Because it's a particular time of year?
No, it's much simpler because I didn't think of this, but they did because they're worn every day.
Okay.
So the only equivalent in adults is safety shoes, if you were...
Yes, makes sense,
But otherwise, we wear different shoes every day.
So you're Microfresh.
Yeah.
You said another company that starts with micro, and I'm trying now to not say it. you put that in mind. Your Microfresh service or product is to stop the shoes smelling after a period of time.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's not about when they arrive in the shop, it's what they're like.
That's right.
Months later.
So in wear, they won't smell. So the dual benefit is they treat them in Asia anyway. That'll protect them in transit, but also they won't smell in wear. So two reasons school shoes are
The reason I said because it's September was back to school, because I thought maybe they get hot in August and, you know, it's the bacteria like that, but it's bacteria, not that. It's through wearing that they get hotter, obviously, by people wearing them every day.
That's right. So you wear them every day, they either grow out of them or they start to smell. Buy a new pair. So if they don't smell,
especially
they last
teenagers,
longer.
I don't know when.
Teenagers, that's right.
When I remember being in school,
it's a sustainability story.
So it's good for parents as well.
It's absolutely good for parents, for the purse. And next, I've got to say, they're the innovative ones that said we're going to push this envelope and say it's good for parents, because before that, the resistance that we had was retailers saying that means we'll sell less product.
Yeah, that's not a good way of... you want to do the right thing for your customer.
That's right.
Well, that's how you build a sustainable business, I would argue. Yeah. Oh, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So, and I like the way that you've widened the application into all these different product lines as well.
Yeah, and the link then was by 2014, we then started to have presence in a lot of stores. We'd been through legal and compliance with most of the high street retailers because they're carrying our name in store, so they need to check that we are who we say we are, product does what it says it does, when we're going to be around, lots of things around that. And then, as I say, John Lewis approached us about bedding. They were the first. They launched bedding in 2014. It was really successful. They then launched baby and nursery bed in 2015. And then people started going into John Lewis, seeing our name on baby and nursery bedding and thinking, wow, it's an aspirational retailer. Yeah. It's the thing that's the closest to you, you know, the baby, your children.
Sure.
And it's certified.
Well, the most precious thing to you.
Most precious thing. And it's certified next to a baby skin. So, yeah, there's some real big ticks there.
So you must feel really proud about that, you know, having started off with your chemistry idea.
I do.
It took you 5 years to get a sale. I mean, that's an amazing journey.
I do. And I suppose, like most business owners, entrepreneurs, is you're just doing it. It's only when you pause and have moments like this that you think, actually, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, because the entrepreneurs, you know, like you, are always looking for the next thing.
That's right.
So I'm going to ask you that. Where next? What do you want to do next? Or how are you going to take this from where we are now?
The next things are... There's some quite chunky stuff that we're working on. One is Home Fresh, which is about moulding homes.
So this is a development of what you were just talking about.
Yeah, and we've done that now. So that's out now as a product called Home Fresh, and that will be available in retail, DIY retail.
So was it a spray?
It's a little box of spray, yeah. So we've got a cleaner and a protector spray. It'll also be available through Travis Perkins. But we're also talking to construction.
So that's business to consumer.
Business to consumer, that's
right. So
that's
different as well, isn't it?
It's different, yeah. So it's an actual product.
So that's coming soon, is it? Or can you buy it now?
It'll be July, from next month.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and Travis Perkins.
And it's Home Fresh. Everyone listening, if you want to get it, it's Home Fresh, Travis Perkins.
That's right.
Nail that mould, it's a mess. None of us like mould.
That's right. And we're talking to house builders about incorporating it into the houses.
When they do the work.
When they make
it. And that will keep it away.
That will keep the mould away. Amazing. And again, it's not a guarantee.
But is it essentially the same chemistry as the Microfresh?
It's the same chemistry as Microfresh that's on. Right. Baby's safe next to a baby skin. Going back to my original point of not wanting to have anything nasty and hazardous. That's number one. What's coming next? The other thing what's coming next is the US. So we finally got the Microfresh trademark in the US. It took us 6 years.
So why did that take so long?
Because other people had it for different things.
Yeah, the US is quite hard like that. I mean, I can't use the name Reed in the US because someone else is already, but there must be thousands of people called Reed in the US.
That's right.
There are here, so it seems like a funny...
You feel my pain.
Yeah, so that was your... So it's interesting, but you persevered. That's what I'm hearing.
Persevered.
So you got that eventually. You had to get lawyers to keep...
And we had to knock all the, and it wasn't in our industry. So there may be a Microfresh putty somewhere in Wisconsin, or there may be a Microfresh blinds company or a Microfresh car cleaner.
Yeah.
So we had to one by one knock these off, and it took 6 years.
So if you want to use your own brand, you have to get permission in all those different locations.
That's right.
That's a big job.
And in the meantime, we
are you expanding there now? Is that your...
Absolutely. Three growth areas are Home Fresh, the US. So we've now got, you can guys buy socks in the US with Microfresh. You can buy towels and you can buy shoes.
I was thinking shoes.
Yeah,
probably, yeah.
Shoes, yeah. But we know in the US, their FOMO is much bigger than ours. So that comp shopping thing will happen, we think, much quicker, that they'll go around and say, what's this Microfresh thing? We need that.
Right.
And the third thing is automotive.
Oh, go on. So how does that work?
There's a UK company that already has Microfresh. I can't say who. They've not launched yet.
A UK auto company. And will they put it on the seats?
It's in the seats. So it's a microfreshed interior for the cleanest possible interior.
So it will smell good, like new.
It will smell good, and nasty microbes can't grow. And it's just the cleanest possible.
But
and
you can't tell us yet who that is.
No, because it's not launched yet. And no.
So how long have you got to go for that?
We're hoping it'll be either this winter or next spring.
Oh, quite soon as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got a lot going on.
We've got a lot going on. And then we're hoping that that will then spin off into the US, because in the US it's all about aviation. So we're hoping that they will see that and then say, when they get on planes, why isn't this microfreshed? Microfreshed, the verb, which is also coming.
So you want people to say microfreshed.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
okay, right. Yeah, no, I like that. And so, yeah, why isn't my plane seat being microfreshed?
That's right. Well, say, that's a nice shirt. Is it microfreshed?
But that suggests that you could do something to it after it's being purchased rather than part of the production process.
It does.
So you're going to have it at both ends then.
We're not going to have the after treatment for clothing.
Not for clothing.
It has to be built in.
Okay.
To make it permanent almost.
So the shirt wouldn't be microfresh if I bought it from the wrong supplier.
That's right.
But the car seat could be.
Yeah. With the shirt, you'd have to go into the retail and say, you know, look for ones with microfresh on it.
Can you do that now?
Not in the UK. In the US, you can.
But coming soon in the UK?
Soon in the UK, yeah. You can tell now. You're picking up on all my body language. Well, so from spring, summer 26, there will be shirts in the UK. And everything we do, we're not allowed to talk about it until it's in the public domain, as you can probably imagine.
Well, because you're doing this with partners, I imagine.
That's right. Yeah,
you're a supplier to other businesses.
That's right.
Of course, I understand that. Yeah, but you've got a lot. So there's a lot of demand. What I'm hearing is there's a lot of demand. There's a lot of potential in this.
Yeah, there is a huge amount of potential.
So you're actively growing a UK-based business out of Leicester.
That's right.
With markets in the US, different markets around the world.
That's right.
Different product lines. So how do you approach that? How does you as the CEO, what do you prioritise to make sure all of that happens? Because I'm just thinking there's a lot going on here. I mean, I'm a CEO as well. I mean, there's a lot going on here. How's Byron going to nail 1, 2, and 3? Because there are three different.
There are. And what I've done, James, is because I'll chase everything. And I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean is I am naturally, like, wired. So I want to do, oh, that's a good idea, that's a good idea.
So you're always looking for good ideas.
And I'll think, that's a good idea, and then I'll be distracted. And that was on my school reports, it said easily distracted. So we now have a board, an advisory board, which for me is heaven, because I put everything on the table and they say, you can do that or you can do that.
So they help you with strategy, basically.
They help me with, I call it the boring word, strategy, but it's a proper word. It's like the harness on a child going, whoa, just a minute. If you're going to do that, you need to have this, this, and this.
I think strategy is really difficult because it does involve not doing things, which might look interesting, and prioritizing things in an order, and you're not sure if you've got it in the right order.
Yeah.
I think we spend quite a bit of time this time of year on strategy because our financial year ends at the end of June.
Same as this, yeah, we're the same.
You're the same. And so it's, but I always find it tough. I mean, I always feel after really intense strategy meetings, I feel really tired, you know?
Yeah,
so
I do.
There's a lot of brain power involved somehow.
Yeah.
The difference between getting it right and wrong is huge, I suppose.
It's huge. And the driver for me is, if I had the board 6 years ago, I wouldn't have had the trauma of getting the Microfresh US trademark and the cost, which I won't even talk about today. Because when I think about the cost, it's huge.
Oh, well, the lawyers.
The lawyers, yeah.
So why would that have been different if you'd had the board?
Because I'd have said to the board, thinking of going into the US, and they'd have said, right, you need this, 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 this. Whereas we went in and then we almost had to pull out.
Oh, because you didn't have the trademark.
Didn't have the trademark. So we had to have another name in the US that nobody liked, called Virofresh.
Oh, right.
So when we sold the concept, everybody said, love it, great. We said, it's called Virofresh. You've just seen the faces go. So all the clients and
Why is that? What's the difference? I mean, I'm interested in this. So brand, you've got Microfresh, Virofresh. Yeah. Why does one fly and one doesn't? What is that?
I don't know.
Is it because of Viro, you think of virus? And
Micro means small. It just turned people off. Because Microfresh says what it is. It's like it does what it says on the tin. It's clean, so it's fresh, and you can't see it. It's microscopic.
Micro meaning small.
Yeah.
Viro, what's that mean?
We just thought of some other alternatives.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't mean, it doesn't say what it is.
And it just didn't fly at all. And now we own the name Microfresh, 2/3 of the world, which is great. And it's cost us money. But again,
that's called being a uni brand. This is something I've learned along the way.
Yeah.
So having a uni brand is really helpful because you don't have to put money behind different names and different lines.
Yeah.
I mean, our business, Reed, is a uni brand. I mean, we might operate in different areas, but it's always called Reed. But there have been times when we've had other brands and it's always complex.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we just have Microfresh and Homefresh. So now the fact we got it in the US means our potential.
It's a huge market.
It's a huge market.
So you're going to move over there for a bit? We've had podcast guests who have gone lived in the US to get their businesses going.
I need to be there.
So you're thinking about that? More.
Probably not moving over there, but I need to be there at least 4 months of the year, at least between 4 and 6 months of the year. So that's in our strategy for next financial year, starting next week like yours, is that I'll be in the US for at least.
Which bit of the US would you go and look? Because I'm interested in this for people listening. Expanding in the US is a great goal for British businesses because obviously it's a big market. If you've got something successful here, if you can take it there, the upsides are huge. How do you go about that? I mean, so where would you set yourself up? Well, I mean, obviously you've had this problem with the trademarks, but you've got that behind you.
Yeah. So we're going to get an office in New York, but my time will be in around the Boston area, Massachusetts.
Why did you choose that area?
Shoemaking.
Is that a famous
thing? The history of shoemaking.
Shoes are made in that area?
From that area, yeah.
I didn't know
so
that.
So not anymore, but all the shoemaking people are in that area.
Oh.
But the other one is Portland, Oregon, so which I know is diametrically opposite.
That's a long way away, yeah.
It's a huge distance But that's where the sports industry is.
Sports, is that where Nike
is? That's where Nike is. So all the spin-offs are
all around
that area.
I love that book, Shoe Dog.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a really good
book. I read that on a plane and I couldn't sleep. And I thought, that reminds me of my business. Obviously, it's a lot bigger. But that book, it is the entrepreneur's Bible, because that is the story of most entrepreneurs.
If anyone wants a good book to read this summer, we're both recommending here, Byron and me, Shoe Dog.
Absolutely.
The finder of Nike. Yeah. That's a great book. I remember from that they're all on the West Coast. Sports shoe
and
people.
That story, you know, some of the mistakes, the ridiculous expensive mistakes, flying by the seat of your pants. I thought this could be the story of Microfresh. One day, maybe that'll be the book.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll do your story. No, it's a great story. And I mean, it's obviously still very much in evolution and development.
It is massively in evolution.
I can sense your excitement about these new opportunities.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased to hear about Home Fresh because we have a couple of retrofit academies where we help people learn skills to retrofit buildings.
Oh, really?
So, because that's a big, as you were saying, big problem in the UK, the poorly insulated buildings that are often poorly fabricated and need to be retrofitted.
Yeah.
So this Home Fresh product would be a really important ingredient in that, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it should be.
Yeah, and I was talking with someone the other day and they said in London, typically, obviously a lot of old buildings, but a lot of the newer stuff is down to rogue builders, which I'm not going to call, you know, live on this podcast, but they said...
Well, you know their name. But you know what I say. Yeah, that's sad, isn't it? When things that people put money into things and they're not well. We've had a lot of bad examples of that.
The instances of damp and mold in London, in the rest of the country, it's worse in London, and in the rest of the country, it's mainly, of course, Victorian houses, which we all know about, but social housing. Whereas in London, it's kind of almost generic across the board. So you can have people living in Fulham and Chelsea that have got mould and student homes accommodation. It's almost like, paraphrasing obviously, but it's like compact as many housing to smaller areas possible. It's going to give you damp and mould.
Yeah, I suppose densely populated areas. So that would be where you will begin your marketing, I imagine.
Yeah, and we want Home Fresh to be almost like... an altruistic side of the business because it's about quality of life. So we can't set it up as a charity for legal reasons. And if you know about charities, it's quite difficult to have a charity on its own, but we're setting that up as an altruistic side of the business. So the money-making bit that pays all the bills is Microfresh and Home Fresh is about giving back. Because again, it is about quality of life for tenants.
Oh, good for you. And talking about giving back, I'm aware that you're a chancellor of a university. Isn't that
I am,
yeah, yes. So talk about that. And you also do quite a lot of mentoring.
I do, yeah,
so,
yeah,
well,
I do.
I'm interested in this. So talk me about that. Why did you make that decision and how does it fit into your obviously very busy timetable?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody this morning who were talking about social values. And I said, to some people, it comes naturally. So if I'm asked to go and talk to bunch of kids, you know, students or pupils, I want to do it. I want to give back. I want to talk to them and say, anybody can do what I do. You know, I'm from a background that means if you pull yourself up, you can do it. So for me to give that back is absolutely important.
So you go into schools and talk to kids?
Yeah, I go into schools and
do you do that a lot?
I like to do it more, actually, and institutions. And in some cases, I've been asked to talk in prisons and young offenders centres. Institutions, because I believe, I mean, my other half would tell you, she said, Byron sees the good in everybody. And I think there is good in everybody, but I also think there's opportunity in everybody. It may not be something that is relevant. Like I did some work with some excluded kids, and one of them said, I just love climbing. So I said, let's go climbing then. And we went climbing, and I can't climb. But he became almost like the lead in his school when they went climbing. You know, it's a purpose. Another guy liked drumming. And I said, the thing is, I know it's different, but I liked chemistry. That's all I liked. So everybody has something, and
you find something you like.
You find at least something you do like. That. That's right. That's right. It doesn't mean you're a failure if you come up with all this other sort of typical stuff. So I spend a lot of time, James, talking with especially young people, and especially from backgrounds that I was from, because I think this is the first generation where it's gone backwards. It's actually harder.
Well, that is a concern, isn't it?
It's
getting tougher.
Every generation, you know, when I speak to my mum, and then, I mean, I didn't know my grandparents because they were in Jamaica, but when I speak to my mum, then she tells me about her parents, and then going back, and as you probably know, with your parents and going back, every generation gets easier for various reasons: technology advancements, leisure, labour saving devices,
healthcare.
And I think this generation is the first one where it's gone backwards. Yeah.
So what's the question when you go to the schools or young offender, what's the question you most commonly get asked?
What school did I go to?
What school did you go to? What school did you go to?
I mean, I went to a school called Merida and Mundella in Leicester. Mundella's closed now. I think too many...
Why did I ask you that?
Because...
is that because you're talking to people in Leicester or is it...
No, it's because, and again, this is something I've learned, is people feel it's not for them. So they think, what school did... They're looking at me going, what school did you go to? Because how did you get to do that? Did you go to, you know, a posh school? Did you go to Harrow or did you go to... I said, no, I went to Mundella. And they look at me like, how?
It's so
like,
they're looking for some sort of advantage that they don't have.
That's right.
That gives them a reason for not doing what you're doing.
That's right.
Is that what they're looking for?
Yeah. When I stand up with my business and the brand and the stuff I've done in the US, we're on the NASDAQ Tower and stuff like that. And their question is, can anybody do that? And I say, yeah, because...
I guess I did, is your answer.
But it's so, almost a feeling like that's not for them.
Well, why is that? Why do people come with this? Why do young people, or so many of them, feel... restricted in that way, or it's not for
absolutely no scientific or data to back up what I'm going to say, but I think a lot of it is down to social media and mobile phones. When I go into schools these days, you go into school at 8 o'clock, it's quiet. Kids are walking around getting all the social media out.
Never used
before
to be.
I have to go. No, it was always racket. We were.
Yeah, there was a rumble going on somewhere.
That's right.
No, there was a lot of.
That's right. It was always,
people
racket and football.
Fired up, pushing people around and stuff. Yeah, Grange Hill wouldn't have been the same.
That's right. That's right. We're just standing there like that.
So that's interesting.
But I do.
So what's that? But why does social media make people constrain themselves in terms of what their upside could be?
I believe there's what's the word? It's like keeping up with the Joneses. And I think it makes people feel that everybody's having a better time than they are.
They sort of give up on it.
Almost, It's almost like they're having a great time. That's not for me because my life isn't so great, which we all know life isn't that great a lot of
time.
But
we all know our own problems, I suppose.
Yeah.
And other people don't. And we don't know other people's problems. So you see someone doing something on social media or looking fantastic or having a holiday or something.
That's right. And you scroll through social, everybody's having a great time. They're on holiday.
This isn't going away, though, is it, social media?
It isn't going away.
So how do people like you and me, if we want to encourage people to be entrepreneurial and have a go,
we need to get amongst them. My phone's in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that.
You showed it to me,
It's in black and white. And it's everything's in black and white.
Why is that?
Because I don't look at it.
Because you don't look at it?
I don't look at it. A friend of mine said there's a particular red colour, which I'll show you after this, that hits the dopamine in your brain so that you can't put it down.
So how do you put it in black and white? I want to do that.
Yeah, if you go to settings, there's some way of doing it.
Is there?
The phone companies know this, so to change it to black and white is quite hard, but to change it back into colour is quite easy.
I'm going to have a look at that.
But mine's been black and white for coming up for 9 years now.
And that makes a difference.
A massive difference. I go out and I never look at my phone after 6 o'clock.
I saw that picture of you playing the bass guitar on the front of your phone. Oh, that looked cool. I thought you put it on black and white deliberately.
No, the whole phone is.
The whole phone is like
that. The whole phone is,
Right. So that's very interesting.
Yeah. And when we're out with friends, I never look at my phone. 6 o'clock, I switch off. I play football. I play music. We, you know, we do things as a family. I do normal things, read books.
So you get rid of the phone at 6 o'clock.
Absolutely.
But we had that story, though, that Heathrow Airport was closed and the guy didn't answer his phone. You know, the CEO But that could happen to you, I suppose.
That's right, it would be, yeah.
But I suppose you're saying that's a price I'm prepared to pay.
I learned that from living in Denmark, because that's a very Scandinavian thing to do.
Not just switch it off.
Switch off. So when I, on my first day at Echo, we finished at 3. I was in the office, I was thinking about 20 past 3, and somebody came around and said, "What are you doing?" In Danish, Vedelabedu. Which you know.
Yeah, we have a Swedish member of our team. I was quite impressed by your Danish and Swedish, I should add.
The direct translation is, "What are you doing?" But it's not meant in an aggressive way. So when she said it translated into English, it sounded quite aggressive. And I said, "I'm just finishing off." She said, "Why?"
Yeah.
I said, "Well, I'll be leaving soon." She said, "In Denmark, if you're here after hours, that means that you've not been working in the daytime. So it's seen as a sign of inefficiency."
What time do you have to start, though? If you
7. Go?
7 till 3.
I didn't read that either before I started the job.
Did you get there at 7? You didn't tell her I was a bit late.
My first day, and I was like, am I really signed up for this?
7 is early.
7 a.m. Yeah. 7 till 3 because of it's something to do with the daylight and the farmers or something.
But that's quite a nice working day because you get a good evening.
You do. But it's very, very quiet. So you have a long, long evening.
Right.
And I was there on my own. So I had this loneliness thing that I'd never had in my life.
All right. So people say that being bored is an important source of creativity. So they say that looking at phones is what people do now when they would otherwise be bored.
That's true.
And you've just said you shouldn't look at your phone. And what I'm hearing from you is that you were prepared to put yourself into a place where it was very quiet.
That's right.
And you maybe were a bit bored.
And cold, so I went in February.
And you read and did things differently. And then you came back and started a wonderful business. I mean, this is sounding more than coincidental to me that, you know, your mind was sort of working in a different way than just liking things and scrolling through stuff.
I think I was talking to somebody the other day and I said, you know, 20 years ago, if you were sat at a desk, your boss thought you weren't working. Now we all look at screens all day and it's the opposite. So I'm used to doing things. I can go into a shoe factory and spray 15 racks of shoes because I've done it in the past, because I learned that way.
Right.
When I was at Zenica, I learned to spray shoes, spray leather, and I was doing stuff. And so when computers came in, James, anyone that knows you will tell you, they'll say, "Byron can't sit in front of a computer for more than half an hour. I can't, I have to get up and I just feel like I'm not efficient."
Right.
So I can't sit on my phone doing that.
That might be your secret power. Sort of your secret advantage, Byron.
And if I'm out with
people, it's not a secret because we can all profit from your insight.
I find myself making excuses when I'm out with people, because I might think of something, they'll say, "Just a minute, I've just got to do this." And I'll do whatever I need to do, and then I'll put it away.
Yeah, if you have an idea or you want to find something out, that is useful to have it then.
Yeah.
But that's because I've been thinking, you know, an analog life is good in many ways. You can cut off that, but you've actually got a routine where you do that.
I absolutely do that, and sometimes we're out. You can be out with people, and somebody says, "Oh, just a minute, I've got to," and they sit there on the phones, and then normally one of the others will say, "Byron's got a global business, and he's not on his phone."
Right.
Like it's all relative.
That's quite satisfying, though, isn't it? Very good, Byron. I like that. Well, I'm always my wife and I. So, "Oh, you're on the phone again." She always says, "So are you?" You know. So, I think we can both learn from this.
Amy, by the half, she's like me.
Oh.
So she doesn't do phones either.
So 6 o'clock gets put in a drawer, does it?
Put in a drawer,
and you don't look at it until the next morning.
No. Occasionally, I might have to do something, you know, message. But I don't sit there.
No, looking at it while you're watching TV or something.
No. Don't watch TV.
You don't look at X and get down rabbit holes and stuff like that. Well, I'm learning. I'm learning from you. I'm going to try.
Whenever people say, "Have you
seen
this thing on social media?" I'll say, "No."
So you don't look at it for news?
No.
Do you watch the TV for news?
Not really, no.
Because one of our other guests, Jan, he closed himself off from news totally.
Yeah.
He said he didn't help his mental health. And so he doesn't. He deliberately doesn't look at the news.
I don't look at the news. I don't look at the weather. Hence I'm wearing this today.
And it's got a bit hot. Yeah.
But I find if you have a detox from news and you go back to it, it's constant bad news. And you think, wow, why am I listening to all this stuff that I have no control over? And it's all negative. And I know that's what sells, but I don't want to hear it. And of course, I keep up to date with current affairs. I have Talksport on in the car or One Extra, and every now and again they have a little news bulletin.
Yeah.
But I don't listen to, you know, half an hour news programs.
So you've cleared your mind for things that you want to prioritize.
I have. And I sleep 7.5 hours every night.
You've released you. Well, that's very important too, I'm told. But no, these are serious points though, that I think help people to be really successful.
Yeah. And I learned this from Scandinavia. You know, right. So my Danish friends, now they joke, they say, you can't get the Scandinavian out of you because they do have
So you can take Byron out of Scandinavia, but you can't take Scandinavia out of Byron. I like that. So what are the top three things you think we should be more Scandinavian about, you know, if we were thinking in the UK to raise our game in this respect?
I think community. When I was there, there's a strong sense of community. I was welcomed with open arms. I was the only, I guess, non-white person in the town of 8,000 people, and everybody made me feel so welcome.
That's very
and
nice.
And Danes have a natural sense of community. And it's little things like, you know the saying, treat others as you want to be treated? And it's kind of an inbuilt thing. That's number one. The other thing is Scandinavia is very strong on family. So this 6 o'clock cutoff thing is we want to spend time with our families, and it makes you more efficient in work. So I have two sides of my brain, which does amuse people. I have the work, Microfresh, entrepreneur, chancellor, Byron Dixon.
Yeah.
And I have the after 6 o'clock Byron Dixon. And the two are very different because I can go into a store and work out what the bill will be at the end by the time I get to the till. That's this side of Byron Dixon.
Yeah.
But I can't tie my shoelaces properly, and that's this side of our
hands. Right.
And Amy will tell you, she'll say, you know, watching me trying to cut a banana. I watched her cutting a banana once for breakfast, and I thought, how does she do that with one hand like this? And I tried it, and she said, stop, because you're going to cut your fingers off.
All right. Okay, so you're very good at separating.
I'm like, that's this and that's this. And I suppose the third Scandinavian trait is... there's a thing in Scandinavia, in Denmark anyway, I know in Denmark, called Jantelov. And what that means is no one's better than anybody else.
It's almost sort of egalitarianism.
Yeah. It's almost the stay humble thing
right.
talking about in football.
They talk about that in football?
Last year, Arsenal and Man City were taking the mickey out of each other saying stay humble. And ironically, it came from Haaland, who is Norwegian.
Right.
I don't know if that's the reason, but there's a thing in Denmark where, you just stay humble. Don't go out saying I'm wonderful and I'm this and that. Just... Yeah.
So you really related to those.
Absolutely. And which is why when I went to Echo and I met Carl Toosby, now in Zeneca, you met your line manager. You didn't meet their manager, or definitely not their manager.
Mm.
You're just there. Mm. And when Carl Toosby came, I thought, he's the owner. And he came in and spoke to me. And that's a typical Scandinavian trait.
And you apply that now in your business?
Absolutely.
You go and talk to everyone on the shop floor and stuff?
Yeah. Of course, we're not all equal, but it's an equalish feeling. So I encourage people to be themselves.
Mm.
And I say, be yourself. And I've got a bit of a, there's a rapper called KRS-One, and I took a snippet of, he did a thing called Edutainment where he did a seminar, and one of the modules was called Be Yourself. And I send that to everybody in our business when they start. And it's quite deep stuff. It's 5 minutes long. But it basically says, you know, being yourself means you might walk up to your boss and say, I want to leave or I want to do another job. Mm. But the main thing is be yourself and feel that you can be yourself. It means to feel you can walk into my office and say, I'm not happy.
Well, I guess that's ultimately the best way to give the best of yourself, if you can be yourself.
I think so.
Fulfill.
I think so.
Work.
I don't want people working for me that are unhappy or feel oppressed. I'd rather them to say, I'm not happy, or I don't like it here, or there's something majorly wrong. I don't want them just festering and then just walking off.
Just lastly, you mentioned the university, or I mentioned it as well.
Yeah.
So what does that involve, your chancellorship?
Yeah,
so
it's a pro chancellorship. Yeah, De Montfort University. So it's a ceremonial role, I think is the saying.
Right.
So I don't have to do any work.
Right.
The irony is the vice chancellor, Katie Normanton, people think that I'm her boss, because in everyday language, if you're a vice chancellor, it's like vice president, then you've got the president.
Well, I thought that.
Yeah.
it's not. Surely that's the case.
It's not. No, it's not. So, I'm chancellor of DMU. And DMU is the second university in Leicester. You've got Leicester, University of Leicester. And they typically have a wide student base, like an old-fashioned polytechnic, I think is the saying. But I do awards. I give out the degrees every 6 months to a year.
Right.
And I try and do the business degrees. Obviously, I have a business. And if I can, I sit and inspire the students. I did give a talk.
So you do go and talk to the students?
Yeah.
It's not just ceremonial.
Yeah. So I've done a talk with the students, again, just about the business, and that anybody can do it.
Well, that's a really great thing to do. So you'd encourage other entrepreneurs to consider getting involved with
absolutely.
The university.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Did they approach you or you?
They approached me, yeah.
They knew you.
And they said, we'd like you to be a pro chancellor. And I said, absolutely.
That's a really great thing to do. But I mean, at the end of each of my conversations, I like to ask two questions. And the first one's related to what you were just saying, really, is what gets you up on a Monday morning? It comes from my Love Mondays theme, as you can see.
What gets me up on a Monday morning is the energy to drive this business. And I mean that, I don't mean that in a sarcastic way, but I do love what I do. And people say, we cannot believe your business is 18 years old because you look so energized. And I am actually really energized. So that gets me up on a Monday morning to go, right, we've got a senior leadership team meeting. How can we drive this business? How can we make sure that the team are growing? Obviously, we've got to grow the business financially as well, but also we're growing a global ingredient brand. And we want to be the next Hoover. Hmm. You know, is that room being Hoovered? Is that top microfreshed? Is that room microfreshed? Is that room home freshed? That, yeah, it really
so
does.
You've got a global ambition in that respect.
Yeah. To infinity and beyond.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I can see why that would get you getting on the month. And then the next question is from my interview book, Why You, 101 Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again. And it's, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Still heading up Microfresh, home fresh. I'm hoping we'll have a much larger US presence at the time. I do love the UK. The weather's a bit of a pickle.
It's been quite good recently.
But I see myself as the head of a global ingredient brand.
Head of a global ingredient brand.
The global ingredient brand.
Global ingredient brand. That's right. That sounds better.
The global brand for freshness.
A global brand for freshness. Well, yeah. I wish you every success on that journey. And I hope we'll have the chance to talk again, maybe in 5 years' time, and see how you're progressing.
Yeah,
I hope so. All right. Great talking to you, Byron.
Hey, thank you. And you too.
Thank you for coming in to talk to me. Thank you, Byron, for joining me on All About Business. I'm your host, James Reed, Chairman and CEO of Reed, a family-run recruitment and philanthropy company. If you'd like to find out more about Reed, Byron, and Microfresh, all links are in the show notes. Also, if you'd like to know how to switch your iPhone to black and white, which I've just done, go to Settings, Accessibility, Display and Text Size, and then switch color filters to On. Set yourself a challenge. Let me know how long you last in the black and white world in the comments. See you next time.